Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a special, unprecedented daylight episode of Sour Graps. Yeah, it's still daylight outside. It's never happened before, Sour Graps, but my wife and kid are out of town. So I figured I'd knock this out before dinner. It's quarter to six central time. Maybe it's dark where you are, but it's light here where I'm doing this. And that's crazy. It's not quite light enough, 'cause it's actually snowing outside, 'cause it's Wisconsin in mid-March. And so it snows. But as part of the self quarantine, just to make sure I don't get the COVID, I'm here just hanging out. Doing a little spring cleaning. It's snowing outside, doing spring cleaning, but again, Wisconsin. So I figured I'd just go ahead and do this, because last night on SmackDown, we had another unprecedented event, an empty arena episode for SmackDown. Now, obviously, this comes as the... the social distancing of the precautions toward the coronavirus, COVID-2019. And that's smart. It's very smart. It's in places it's mandatory, but it's also smart. And again, there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of panic going on. I don't know why anybody thinks they need 75 rolls of toilet paper. I guess the idea being, well, if I'm stuck in my house for a few months and I run out of toilet paper, then I'm screwed. Which, yeah. But still, it's what this is if you are healthy, you don't want to contract it. Not because it's a death sentence, but because you could pass it on to someone for whom it would be a much harder go of it. Been asthmatic my whole life, personally. Also, don't know if you can tell, I'm an obese motherfucker. So that makes me a higher risk, even though I'm in the age group where it wouldn't normally be. So, I don't want to get it. But I'm still be at a lower risk than somebody who was elderly. Now, thank God, it doesn't seem to affect kids too much. So my daughter, even if she were to get it, it would be no fun. But she would almost certainly pull through. Mostly as a stay-at-home dad who does podcasts, I don't go outside, mostly because, outside is overrated. And also, I hate talking to people I don't know. So I'm basically an agoraphobe. So I'm going to make it through this no problem. My wife obviously has a job where she an office building with a lot of people where she works. And the only way I'm going to get it is if she gives it to me. So if I die of the COVID, I want everybody to call the police, because my wife gave me a disease that killed me. And she should go to jail, maybe. Anyway, let's talk about the show that happened last night as a result of the, shutting down things and not wanting to have thousands of people in an arena in Detroit. Now, we'll talk more later about WrestleMania and why that hasn't been shut down yet, hopefully yet. But as of right now, it's still going on. So all of the stuff they talked about on the show last night was in preparation for WrestleMania. Again, a show that is currently still scheduled to happen. But in all honesty, probably won't. Anyway, so last night starts with Triple H. like saying, hey, here's a performance center. And it's interesting the way he does, because, you know, he's the granddaddy of the performance center and the and NXT and all that stuff. And that's cool that he's doing that. But he mentions all these people who came through the performance center. This is where they trained and all this stuff. This is our training hub. This is where people, even from the main roster, will go and get checked out. They'll train. They'll, you know, do whatever they need to do. They'll do a little rehab, all that kind of stuff at the performance center as well. And then he's like, hey, look at this, all these empty seats that are lit blue because SmackDown. I'm assuming those same seats will be lit red on Monday because they're moving the Stone Cold episode to Monday, which is just, we'll talk more about it. It's a crazy time we're living in, people. We got empty arenas doing matches. It starts out with Cole and Triple H hanging out on commentary, and Triple H, wow, man, is it possible he's the best color commentator that we've ever had? Or it was only because it was last night and it was him making fun of Michael Cole. Like, he was shooting the whole time, making fun of himself, Cole, everything else that was going on. I thought it was all excellent and I loved it. He really added a lot of levity to the proceedings, which was sorely needed. But all of this also served, when you have somebody like Triple H who's injecting a kind of realism into the commentary, you know, like recognizing, yes, this is weird. This is a crazy thing that's happening. And also the outside world exists, which is why we're doing it this way. It's weird to have Michael Cole still insist on doing stuff like, and we start out tonight with Boss Time. And then you have Greg Hamilton get on a microphone to announce to a crowd that isn't there. Like, we know it's them. We know it's them coming in because we have on the TV screen Bayley and Sasha Banks. We know it's them coming in. We can see that. But when he says, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sasha Banks and the SmackDown Women's Champion, Bayley. When he says, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome, that's for the in-house audience. That's who he's talking to. Whenever he says that, when there are actual people in the crowd, that's who he's talking to. In this case, I guess he's talking to us at home on our couch, and that we should welcome Bayley and Sasha, which doesn't make any sense. They continue to do, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my guest this time, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know how I'm supposed to welcome them at home. There's a lot of things where I hope they figure this out by Monday with Raw and continuing, because they're going to do NXT there. They're going to do SmackDown there next week. I hope they can to find a balance between doing things the way we've always done it because we have no other ideas, and also let's adapt to this new way of doing things because we have to. So Bayley and Sasha come out. Bayley's upset because Paige isn't there because Paige had coronavirus-related travel issues. And yeah, nobody should be on a plane for very long right now. Those things are friggin' petri dishes in a flying tube. So yeah, don't do that. Don't get on a plane. I know the prices are fantastic right now. Don't get on a plane. I don't know. Maybe she was trying to fly in from Europe, because you can't do that anymore. Anyway, so Bayley's upset about it. And then Alexa and Nikki come out and they go, what, you guys want to fight? Let's fight. And it's a weird thing to be like, you guys want to fight? Let's fight. Hey, everybody, do you want to see a fight? I mean, to their credit, they didn't actually do that, but it felt like they were about to. And so they have a match. And there's a commercial break. And everyone wants to know, hey, are they actually going to fight during the commercial break? Turns out, no. They're just milling around the ring. And the ref was, you know, making sure the turnbuckle pads were tightened and all that kind of stuff. And nor should they have been fighting. Why are you filling up your bump card for nobody? We can't see it at home. I mean, we did. And then Alexa Bliss got pissed at Shawn for sharing it. Well, you know, no need to be pissed. This is something everyone wants to know. Like, we all want to know, what are you guys doing in the commercial? And it's just like, you know, it got somehow broadcast via an international feed. Personally, I wish that we had seen the feed and they'd just been like chilling in their opposite corners, like on their phones, checking the Insta, sipping on bubble tea and frappuccinos. Because I think you should lean into how weird and random this all is. It's a fantastically different feel to it. So, I don't know, lean into it. Be fun with it. They're not going to do that, though. They're too self-serious. But, okay, so you have this match that happens. And then the match ends because Asuka runs in to answer the trash talk that was issued by Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross last week. By the way, Nikki Cross pumping up the crowd that isn't there. Again, if you lean into the absurdity of it, it's fun. If it's like, she really thinks she should be doing this because that's what you do, or you forgot you don't need to do it because the crowd isn't there, which means when the crowd is there, you're just going through the motions. I like it better if you're actually, if it's all satire. Like, hey, everybody, get up. Let's do this. Yeah. What do you say? That's right. Like, if you actually lean into the absurdity of it, it could be a lot of fun for us at home to watch. Anyway, so Asuka shows up and attacks, distracts Alexa Bliss and then dances on the ramp like a maniac. And I love it. Distraction, finish. Okay. Which means, I mean, I guess let's assume we're going to get Alexa and Nikki versus the Kabuki Warriors, probably versus the Glamazons or Divas of Doom or whatever. And that should be fun. But I do wish they hadn't spoiled it earlier because Triple H was like, Alexa Bliss, Bayley, and Sasha Banks, Elias, all these people who came up through the Performance Center, but added to all the people in the SmackDown roster that he mentioned. He also said Asuka. And I was like, Asuka, that's a weird thing. That's the only name from Raw you mentioned. Is it because, Trips, you saw her backstage, you knew she was going to be on the show, and you just mentioned her because she was in your brain, and that tipped the hat of whether or not she was going to interfere? Okay, fine. I'll forgive a lot of stuff from last night, especially if they figure out how to strike the balance between doing it the way it's supposed to have always been done and also a new thing. I'll forgive a lot over the next few weeks here or months. We have no idea. Yeesh. Then we have an in-ring interview. And there was a very famous empty arena match years and years and years ago. The Rock versus Mankind. But that was pre-taped and heavily edited. There's no reason to do these shows live anymore. Like, especially with the travel stuff. Fly everybody in for a weekend, okay? Write all your stuff out. Have them perform everything, tape it, edit it together, and do it, and then send them home. Don't make them fly multiple times. Don't make them break quarantine multiple times. That's more opportunities they have to catch this thing and then disseminate it through the locker room. Bring everybody in for one weekend. Obviously, this weekend's half over. I don't think they've done this. Everybody, fly in this weekend. We're going to tape everything for 14 hours a day. 2 days, and then we're going to figure out a way to edit it all together. We're going to show some old highlights and video packages and stuff. We're going to be able to stretch everything out using what we taped with interviews and backstage segments and in-ring stuff. It's all going to be taped. And then we can, you know, we can play with reaction shots and stuff like that and all this kind of stuff. It's just so weird to do it live. Because, you know, let's welcome Roman Reigns. And he looked weird because I don't think he's ever done an empty anything. He's not like he's a guy who came up through the indies who was, working matches in front of 15 people at a high school gym. Like, he doesn't know what this is. So he's weirded out by it. Michael Cole, makes a point to bring that up to him. And he's like, yeah, this is not something I'm normally used to. But I thought that this segment was fine and that it actually showed Roman just being a regular dude and him not having to work the crowd or be extra cool so everybody sees what a cool dude he is. Just a guy talking, like making fun of Goldberg because Goldberg went to Georgia and Roman went to Georgia Tech. Okay. It is weird they keep on talking about these matches that they say are definitely happening when if they are happening, it's probably postponed or in some kind of crazy altered way. But again, it doesn't make any sense to me to have these two guys holding microphones, sitting in director's chairs in the ring next to each other, talking into microphones. They're a foot away from each other. You could have them wear the little, I mean, I understand it's for TV. That's why you need a microphone, but you have them wear the little lapel mics. That's the same thing. Like, you wouldn't have Reigns sitting in the back if they were going to do a pre-taped backstage interview. He wouldn't be holding a microphone. He'd have the little thing on. The only reason you're holding the microphone is, like, for the fans, you know? That's so it looks like what we're expected, the fans in the ring, what they expect. You find your happy medium. Just have two guys sitting in there. You can have their little microphones on the lapels, and that's it. Or a boom mic, even. Like, you don't need to do the holding microphone thing. It's weird. But yeah, so Reigns, they say, some people, Reigns, say that you got this match when maybe you didn't deserve it. And he's like, well, I don't even care about those people. I'm like, well, no, that's the wrong framing, Michael Cole. We're not saying that he doesn't deserve it. We're saying it's weird that you have a whole context of here's the convention. Win the Royal Rumble and you get a title match. Come in second in the Royal Rumble and you can walk up to a different champion and say you want a title match. That's a weird thing. That doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't matter who does it. It's not like Roman doesn't deserve a match. It's just a weird way to set up a match when the other way you set up a match is 30 dudes going over the top. You know, like, one of those things requires considerably more effort. And it'd be one thing if Roman wasn't in the Royal Rumble, but he was. And he was the last guy eliminated. He almost got a guaranteed match. But losing out on the guaranteed match doesn't mean anything, because then he gets a guaranteed match by walking up to the champion and saying, hey, I would like a shot at your title belt. And then that just happens. Like, it's not like we're saying, boo, Roman, you don't deserve it. It's like, that's a stupid way to book a title match. It has nothing to do with you, Roman. Obviously, like, absent any other thing, you deserve the title match. You're Roman Reigns. We understand you're going to get a title match. I wish they would just have a little bit more pretense to show you earning it. That's all. It's a little thing. Hey, Jeff Hardy's back. Jeff Hardy gets interviewed backstage, and he's really excited to come back, but he's not. He's very stiff in his delivery of the lines that were written for him. And then King Corbin interrupts, and I wish Matt Hardy had been like, I remember you, though, from like a year ago when I was here. Didn't you used to dress like a waiter? Before that, you were like some kind of weird biker dude, and you had stringy hair for a while? I remember you. Why are you dressed up like a king? Like, I wish somebody whose world doesn't include that information would ask King Corbin why he's dressed like a king. That's idiotic. Like, we understand it because we watched him win the stupid tournament and then he said, okay, I'm a king now, but that was months ago. somebody debuting on SmackDown or returning to SmackDown who doesn't have that context should be like, this is weird. Why are you dressed like that? I would have loved if they had Jeff Hardy do it. But they didn't. They just had King Corbin make DUI jokes. It's funny because Jeff Hardy has a serious problem and I hope he deals with it in time. I hope and pray that's the last time we ever hear of that and that he has dealt with it. And we don't get any more of that because it's really not great. Jeff Hardy says, well, it's funny that you said, because I have a match tonight. Oh, yeah? With who? With you! What? That's the first anyone's telling the king about it. And then Elias is there, and then the king hates Elias, and then we'll talk more about that later. There was a cool backstage moment. Again, this is a weird thing that is like filming all this stuff backstage. I'm hoping it was all pre-taped. Maybe live too, of Daniel Bryan. Hey, Drew Gulak, that was an amazing match we had. I still feel it. You really had me. I'm not too proud to say, like, you found some holes. Like, you countered everything that I did. Like, I almost didn't beat you. You almost got me. Will you teach me how so that I can get better? And before Gulak can answer, which I hope the answer was yes, let's do that. Sammy and Cesaro and Nakamura set up a little match where Brian and Cesaro get into it a little bit, and there's a challenge. And so Brian versus Cesaro in an empty arena. Like, if anybody could make that amazing, it's these two. Did they make it amazing tonight? Spoiler alert, not really, because they didn't really get a lot of time to do that. Anyway, so Elimination Chamber, Braun and this is the problem with, you know, what I said. You book yourself into a corner. Am I happy Sami Zayn is the IC champ? Yeah. He's the guy who should have been IC champ a long time ago. I forget who was IC champ at the time, but he was in a feud with that person. Was it Miz? Was it Kevin? I don't know. And he picked up the IC title and held it and kind of looked at it. And the crowd went ape. Because they knew. This is back when Sami Zayn was the purest of baby faces. And they knew that was the title. That was the one that he was destined to hold. And he's always seemed like it was right for him. So it's good that he's holding it. Is it bad that they finally put a singles title on Braun Strowman 3 years too late? And that he lost it in a gimmicky handicap match in his first defense? Yeah, that sucks. You could figure out a way to make neither of those things suck. Like, you could make, like, it would have sucked if he had beaten Sammy and Cesaro and Nakamura 3-on-1. That would have sucked if Braun had done that too. So they really had to have no way of winning this. The best way they had was to put the title on Sammy. But again, Sammy is this heel. He's a heel to Vince McMahon. He comes out and he says mean things to the crowd. But like, this guy is using his time off to try and get, like, hey, thanks for everybody for, you know, all your positive response to me winning the Intercontinental title. You know, you could do to help celebrate is to donate money to try and build more schools in Syria and stuff like that and get medical supplies to this war-torn country because Sami Zayn is objectively like one of the best dudes in the world. But they put the IC title on him by having, you know, him and two other dudes gang up on a crowd favorite thereby ensuring that he would be booed by a bunch of casuals in a hypothetical, let's see if it ever happens, title defense at WrestleMania. So he goes into WrestleMania as the IC champ, if WrestleMania happens, and gets booed by people when his time should have been. Everyone just skanking in the crowd and just going nuts because we all love Sami Zayn. He was the most righteous, pure babyface in the entire company, in the entire world, in all of wrestling. And they had to turn him heel to put the title on him so that he could get booed while holding it. Because, I mean, I have no proof of this because Vince doesn't agree with Sami's politics. I don't know. So we'll see whatever happens when Braun comes back. He's got the perfect, he did a little PSA where he's like, everyone, you gotta remember, with the coronavirus out there, it's time to wash these hands. And I think that's great. And they probably should have played that little PSA that he did. They should have played that on the show last night and didn't. But whatever. Also, I'd be remiss to not mention that the Drew Gulak and Daniel Bryan match from Elimination Chamber, which was like stepping through a portal into an alternate dimension of WWE, where like guys are allowed to wrestle great matches. Like this is how we're not going to do rest holds. And here's this thing where you get the heat and then you do. No, it's just amazing storytelling between two amazing guys where they beat the crap out of each other. It didn't feel like it felt like I was watching like Ring of Honor in 2006 or something. I don't know. Like it was just crazy to watch New Japan or whatever. It didn't feel like WWE at all watching Gulak versus Daniel Bryan. Personally, would I have liked Daniel Bryan to put over Drew Gulak? Yes. But would there be any guarantee that they would do anything with that added bump, added rub they would given Drew Gulak with that? They didn't give anything to Mustafa Ali. Not really. I mean, they were planning on it, but then he got hurt for the Elimination Chamber push, but they haven't done anything since he's been healthy with him. Now, they didn't have any of those little teasers with the Ring of Light last night on SmackDown, but that might have been just because of the arena thing and the way they were doing everything. But I hope when he comes back, they'll actually have something to do with him. But Buddy Murphy beat him clean. And then Buddy Murphy went on a losing streak, ultimately, you know, becoming Seth Rollins' other guy, but he had to go to a different show in order to do that. It was all very odd. So ultimately, am I excited that Drew Gulak and Daniel Bryan appear to be friends now? Yeah. Let's see where that goes. That could be great. But might have been amazing to like, it seems like they're turning Gulak face to team with Bryan. It seems like that. We'll see what happens, but it would have been kind of amazing if they could have like cemented a brand new, amazing heel and give him a stable of dudes to like teach how to all be technical wizards, you know, like make him into like Cobra Kai or something, you know, that'd be really interesting. But we'll have to see where this goes. Hey, they played the entire SmackDown Elimination Chamber match. Am I going to talk about it? Kind of. God bless Grand Metalik and Lince Dorado for trying to murder themselves. Jesus. Metalik, as I've said this, it's a criminal that he spent so many amazing years of his career languishing in WWE where they don't let him do awesome stuff like he did in the Elimination Chamber match. And Lince Dorado did a shooting star press from the ceiling of the Elimination Chamber. So there's that. Otis looked like a big dope, especially because when he finally got his hands on Dolph Ziggler, he did not murder him. He dropped him throat first across the ring ropes. I mean, later he tried to run through him like, you know, like a tank or whatever, and then fell out of the ring. But I mean, Tucker looks good. I'm excited to see what they do with the Hemi machinery, but they look like dopes. New Day gets eliminated early. Usos. Rude and Ziggler. Fuck Rude and Ziggler. I hate them. I don't enjoy them at all as a team or even as individuals right now. Usos got eliminated last by Miz and Morrison. Morrison's amazing. I feel like they're not utilizing him to his full ability. I hope that in 6 months he's got a pretty awesome singles career in WWE right now. He doesn't need to be the athletic half of the tag team that cheats to retain their titles in title matches but loses every non-title match. He doesn't need to be that. His ceiling is way higher than that in this company. Come on. But yeah, we got to see the entire Elimination Chamber match because they were filling for time. It's totally understandable. You would need to in this situation. We'll see what happens, from here on out, you know. Still holding out hope for that Mandy Rose on a pole match between Ziggler and Otis. Here's how you do an empty arena promo. Miz and Morrison are out there and they're talking directly to the camera. They're not talking to an empty arena. They're talking directly to the camera. One, that's great. Do that. Don't pretend you have people there that you can pump up a crowd unless you're doing it ironically. You know? Then they start doing things like, hey, if there's anyone here who doesn't think that I'm the greatest athlete in the world, speak now. Excuse me, or forever hold your peace. And then nobody does because there's nobody there. And they did that a lot. Is there anyone here who thinks that my movies aren't Oscar worthy? Speak now. That's good. It was all very, very fun. I liked that a lot. Yeah. These guys are really good. And this is how you do an empty arena promo. You call attention to the fact that it's there, and then you handle the way you do it a little differently. Good kudos all around to those people. Hey, Mojo Rawley is a Raw guy, but he's on SmackDown, and there's no wildcard rule, but whatever. He's wearing a pink Zubaz suit. So, yeah, Rob Gronkowski is going to be on SmackDown next week, and while there's not official that he's signed a contract, it's probably going to happen. So let's all get ready for the Gronk era of professional wrestling. This dude who's never really taken a bump could really use a lot of seasoning in the PC before they actually, put the Universal title on him. I don't know. I mean, would you put it past him? If he wins the where's SummerSlam this year? I mean, provided SummerSlam exists and we're not all dead from the COVID by that point. Where's SummerSlam? Boston. A couple hours from where the New England Patriots played. Gronk is winning a title. I don't know which title. He's winning a title at SummerSlam. That's happening. That is a done deal. You could sign it in blood. That is happening. I personally would like for him to be a decent wrestler by that point, or better than he is right now. So I hope Gronk spends a lot of time at the PC, whether there is an audience there or not, getting better so that when he wins a title at SummerSlam in 5 months, that he doesn't suck. Yeah. But there was a great moment where Mojo says to Michael Cole, who's sitting there, get hyped, Michael, get hyped. Come on, Cole, get hyped. And next to him, Triple H, who's been needling Michael Cole this whole time. He did a great joke about how I'm the only guy who can get demoted and get busier, and that popped Michael Cole like nobody's business. At one point, he collars in Michael Cole's soul patch with a little Sharpie. He's using the camera. He says, "We're shorthanded tonight, Michael Cole. What are you doing? Not all of us can have only one job and be really bad at that job and keep that job." God, it was so great. More like Triple H, he needs to be on commentary for all of these Performance Center shows. They get kicked, freaking Jerry Lawler and Saxton, and yes, even you, Corey Graves, get the fuck out. Just let it be Cole or Phillips with Triple H next to them the whole time. Never, ever leave us, Papa Hunter. We need you. You make it bearable. So anyway, yeah, when Mojo's like, "Come on, Cole, get hyped, get hype." You got Triple H on the other side. I'm going, "Come on, Cole, get hyped. Come on, yeah, Cole, come on, get hyped." It's good. It's very good stuff. Not so great. Daniel Bryan defeated Cesaro, and it could have been amazing. Sami Zayn was on commentary, and you know, Triple H brought up, "Hey, back when you were here in NXT, you had some pretty amazing matches with Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. As you know, that's, I remember them kicking your ass." We must have patched things up, kind of a thing. I like that they actually brings up that history. Good, 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 good. You could honestly, I mean, I understand you had to show the entire Elimination Chamber match. You couldn't not do that. You could have made an amazing thing with having Cesaro versus Daniel Bryan for like 15 minutes and having him just, I mean, I understand it's, there's no crowd there and it's all about the crowd and pumping up the crowd and stuff. And there would be no, this is all, I mean, like you could have had, that would have been awesome if they had actually had Daniel Bryan and Cesaro doing amazing stuff and just had, like Sean said on the podcast last night, have Triple H stand up and not into a mic, just in the crowd going, "This is awesome." That'd have been great. I'm never upset that I get to see Cesaro versus Daniel Bryan, but I'd like to see it where it wasn't like a small package finish and wasn't, you know, short as hell. And it was they attacked Daniel Bryan afterwards, and there was a Gulak. Gulak, I know, got beat up and thrown into the ring steps. I'm not sure who. One of them was down and being pummeled by Cesaro while Shinsuke was, it looked like he was kicking dirt on a campfire. Like he wasn't really, he was not necessarily laying in those kicks to Bryan while Bryan was down. That did not look good. But it certainly appears as though Gulak and Bryan are teaming up and are friends now. So they turned a natural, amazing heel Gulak face to team with Bryan instead of establishing this brand new heel, like top heel in Gulak. And again, we'll have to see where it goes, but I feel like turning Gulak face doesn't help you. You need better heels on SmackDown. You know who's not a good heel? King Corbin. He lost to Jeff Hardy in 2 minutes. It felt like 2 minutes. I don't know how long it was. It felt like 2 minutes. At one point, Jeff Hardy, again, I don't know if he's doing this because it's just in his blood, in his bones, or if he's doing it because he's calling attention to how weird this moment is. But before he does his like double leg drop to the balls thing that he does, he goes, "Orlando!" Trying to get them all pumped up. And Orlando didn't respond because there was nobody there. But he had a twist. They called it a twist of fury. They called it twist of fury several times. No longer twist of fate. That's they're trying to distance Jeff from his brother, who's going to probably be on AEW soon. And then Jeff hit a swanton, and that was it. It's weird to have like I know you promised Jeff was going to come back this week, and okay, cool. But it's weird to have him have his first match back in almost a year in front of nobody. Like, the pop he would have gotten if you had done it in front of anybody. I think it's one way of doing this. Somebody said this on Twitter, and I think it's a great idea. If you're gonna keep insist on doing this every week, you could put people on, put all the heels on one side of the arena and all the faces on the other side of the arena, and have them boo and cheer their respective people that they're into. They're on their sides. I think that'd be a lot of fun to see how that would work. And maybe you have one guy get popped for an amazing move, and everyone's like, "Hey, sit down. He's not on your side." It could be fun. I don't know. Try fun. Try interesting. Try different. Try not just going through the motions and fun. Like, it looked like a dress rehearsal. It was so weird. Okay, so John Cena is supposed to be back this week, and he's here. I mean, he could have done this live via satellite, but to his credit, he showed up. And he cuts a promo about how everybody who ever got beat by John Cena, it wasn't because they got beat by John Cena that their careers fell apart. It was because they were lazy. And I hate that viewpoint, because it would be one thing if it was UFC and these people had a legitimate fight with John Cena and they lost the legitimate fight with John Cena. And then after that, because they didn't train hard enough or because they got complacent, they lost several matches in a row and fell out of title contention. That would be one thing. But John, the dude in the back who loves you, he decided you were going to win that match. And he decided that the guy you beat in that match was going to lose a lot of matches afterward. That's not your opponent's fault. You can't present it as that way, because that's disingenuous. I understand that it's not real, but it's just a weird way of saying, well, you were just lazy. That's all, you were lazy. The pull yourself up by your bootstrap shit, it just doesn't work for me. So he says that Bray Wyatt is overhyped and overprivileged. Overhyped, sure, they hype him all the time until he loses the match, and then they try and hype him up again. It's like, eventually the crowd just got tired of being hyped for a guy who was going to lose all the time. We knew he was talented, especially like character wise but eventually we just got tired of being hyped, like being told, "Oh, this guy's really good. Look how spooky he is. You love him because he's so good and spooky." And then the spooky good guy would lose all the time, and we got tired of it. So it certainly wasn't Bray Wyatt's fault. It was because of the booking. I don't know about overprivileged. Like, whatever. But he says that we should invest in the future. People like Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle. He says Rhea Ripley. But like, if you booked Velveteen Dream from out of nowhere to have a string of matches, and then he gets to face John Cena at WrestleMania, and John Cena is booked to win that match decisively, and then Velveteen Dream is booked to go on a losing streak, Velveteen Dream is going to wind up in the same boat as Bray Wyatt. So, you know, good old hustle, loyalty, respect. John Cena is sitting there. He's talking about this. And he's done. And then at the end of his thing, you hear a cackle from the audience. And there's Bray Wyatt. And again, they're using microphones and stuff, and I don't think they need the microphones held handheld or whatever. But he gets in, and he's doing his thing. He's looking at the floor, and he's pacing, and he's kind of manic, and he's talking about how you broke me 6 years ago at WrestleMania. And it took a long time to pick up the pieces, but But the Fiend, he put them back together. And I love that he said, like, but see, John Cena, see, no, you love the spotlight. You love the adulation you get from the fans. You need it. You crave it. You're an addict. You fiend for it. And that was a great line. I loved that so much. And now that I have the Fiend on my side, we're going to slaughter you at WrestleMania. And all of this was so good. And it was just, I got a glimpse of this. There's an alternate WWE reality in which, rather than have Bray Wyatt lose that match versus John Cena and then move on to something else and be booked to lose feud after feud after feud, all that stuff, rather than have him do that this entire time, there's an alternate reality in which that loss to WrestleMania really did break Bray Wyatt the character, and he fixated on John Cena, and maybe he never would beat John Cena, but he would ruin things for John Cena. John Cena would get a title shot, and Bray Wyatt would interrupt or attack or distract or whatever, and make it so John Cena could never succeed because Bray Wyatt was always there throwing a monkey wrench into the works. All of this, he's obsessed with him. He follows him around. He attacks him. He psychologically messes with him. All this stuff. You could have had basically Bray Wyatt become Joker to John Cena's Batman, or Superman in this case, because it's John Cena. But you understand what I'm saying. Like an absolute nemesis. And he never gets one over on John Cena because it's John Cena. But he's always there to, like, make John Cena have an obstacle he's got to overcome. He's got, like, Bray Wyatt's always there, like, psychologically messing with the guy until it drives Cena a little batty. The promo last night was directly ripped out of that alternate reality. Like, it was just the idea that, yes, I totally believe that somewhere in Bray Wyatt's mind, he was fixated on John Cena and that particular loss, because really Bray Wyatt was soaring high at the time. Like, 2014, early 2014, that guy, there was so limitless potential. And then, you know, lost to John Cena, kind of buried, never really, he had injuries that held up in certain areas, and a lot of times he'd have amazing ideas for something where, like, he and his you know, his Wyatt family would abduct Kane, and they, like, carry him out, like, hung up like a crucifix, and they carry him out of the arena. And, like, oh my God, they kidnap Kane. There's going to be all, here's what they're going to do. They're going to have, like, promos from the basement of the Wyatt compound where they're torturing Kane. Like, they pulled his mask off, and it's, they pull his mask off, and the hair comes with it, and it's corporate Kane. Like, and Bray Wyatt is there talking to corporate Kane, who's responding in that way, and, like, you know, they, that kind of thing. And they're doing this all for the benefit of torturing psychologically the Undertaker. The Undertaker has to find his way to the Wyatt compound, and there's all this amazing stuff they could have done. Nope. Kane showed up on Raw the next week. I don't know how he got out of wherever they kidnapped him to. They didn't even mention it. So they have all these great ideas they come up with to use for him, and they never follow through on them. So instead of doing all of that crap, you could have had him just be, like, hanging from the rafters, doing his weird, creepy laugh at John Cena this whole time, ruining John Cena's life. Until John Cena finally gets his hands on Bray Wyatt, you know, like, a lot of stuff, but no, I didn't do any of that. But I am excited. Am I excited for this match? If it ever happens? Yes. So let's talk about the, if it ever happens thing. I talked about how a lot of people who were younger who aren't immunocompromised, who don't have a history of respiratory issues, who are relatively healthy. It's just going to be like a bad flu, and you'll get over it. It's not going to be pleasant, but you'll get over it, and you'll be okay. And for better or for worse, let's say that most of the people who would be at WrestleMania fit into that. Do all of their family members? Do all of the people they will come in contact with? Does their Uber driver? The cashier? Does any of that matter? If you go through WrestleMania in Tampa, in Raymond James Stadium with 70,000 people there, somebody who is there is going to be asymptomatic. It's impossible for you to get tested. The only way you can, in America, the only way you can get tested is if you're on death's door. So somebody who doesn't feel sick but is carrying the virus will absolutely come in and transmit it to a lot of other people. And one of those people or somebody that person transmits it to is going to die. Just the way it's going to work.
Oh, well, it's only 97%. It's only a 3% death rate. So it's like 97%, 3% death rate. 3%
of the amount of people who could get it is like a million people. So let's not do that. I understand they're not gonna, but it's weird that they're not acknowledging they're not gonna. They're playing chicken with the county of Tampa Bay and with the governor's office. Which one of us is going to cancel it first? I'll tell you who's not going to cancel it first. Vince McMahon. Because that fucker is not, he's not bending to anybody. If somebody else cancels it for him, it forces him to. Okay, great. I hope they have a lot of contingency plans. If they cancel it, they're on the hook to reimburse a bunch of people who bought ticket packages and stuff like that. If they are forced to cancel it by the city or the county or the state, then they can cash in an insurance policy and then they don't have to pay back shit. The insurance companies do. So that's what they're doing. They're waiting for it. They're waiting for the city to do it. And the city doesn't want to do it because then they're on the hook, I think, for some of that money. I don't know. It's just a weird thing. March Madness has been canceled. Do you get that? That is one of the single biggest sporting events in the world of the year. Gone. Canceled. Not postponed. Canceled. Now, we don't know the NBA season. That also could be canceled. Currently, it's suspended. We don't know when or if they will re-put it back up. It's incredibly important for as many people as possible to stay away from public areas where they might contract it. There are not nearly enough hospital beds in America to hold all of the people who would need to be hospitalized if we all got this shit at once. So let's not have WrestleMania where 70,000 people will be in close proximity to each other. Let's just not. And let's stop pretending that we might. Because you're holding up a lot of people's livelihoods, not even within WWE, but within all the other shit that takes place in Mania Week. I'm, frankly, very, I won't say excited, because obviously because of the implications of the whole thing, but I'm intrigued to see what WWE and AEW do with this whole thing. Like, there's a whole brand new era of studio, hopefully pre-recorded wrestling that they could do here. Bring back people. You know what you could do that could be really friggin' great and people would love to watch? Bring back Talking Smack. Bring everybody to the Performance Center, tape some matches, tape some interviews, and tape some Talking Smack. That'd be awesome. They're not going to do it. But it would be awesome. That was SmackDown. It's still fairly light outside. I have been Alex Pawlowski. Thank you so much, Fight for Faithful. Stay healthy.
Wash these hands.
Wash your hands, not mine. I'll wash my own, but you wash yours. Stay out of public areas if you don't need to. Don't hoard hand sanitizer and toilet paper. I mean, have enough on hand that you, if you need it, but don't hoard it. Okay, cool. We're all right. You know what sucks? Pandemics suck. It's pandemonium. Pandemics suck. I'll never say that the SmackDown, where everybody's trying to make the best of it because, you know, let's all not die together. I'll never say that sucks. You know, I gotta say it because it's the tagline. We need universal health care in this country because everything sucks.